please, please, let's switch off cellular phones also that they don't disturb. They don't disturb us. And today, please comply because we have the police. Non-compliance can lead to a criminal investigation. The police are here. Please switch off your cellular phones so they don't disturb us. Right. General Stolle, we want to welcome you to this engagement. We equally want to express our solidarity with the SAPS arising out of the horrific incident that happened in Ngcobo. We are aware that only yesterday you people were in the Eastern Cape and had to leave from there to here. It's unfortunate we could not, you know, push back this engagement, but it is not out of a lack of consideration. I understand we have a discussion on the issue in the House, I think today, yeah. So that's how much, as Parliament, we also feel about these matters. So our solidarity in that regard. Now, this being a follow-up meeting, therefore, we will not go through the normal process of introductions, because we more or less know the faces that are here. We will go straight into the issues. We had decided as a committee that all the matters that we had dealt with last year, which may not have been conclusive, there is need to tie the loose ends. I think that's been the trend of our hearing since the beginning of the year. And so today's engagement should equally be located in that context. So to a very, very large extent, I think our engagement will be a follow-up by and large around the issues that we had discussed last year. We have received your correspondences, documentation from CETA, from the SAPS, from IPID, that should seek to assist us in this engagement. Now, having looked at the documentation, Commissioner, instead of burdening you with a presentation and CETA, I'll give my comrade team. It will take us through for 30 or 45 minutes, and thereafter I'll allow comrades to also come in.
Sorry for the slight delay, Chair. I just wanted to check with you, is there any service provider, like the last time we ended up with Keith? Are you aware of it? If you're not, and he's here, can you ask him to leave the meeting so that we don't dilly-dally around that much? If he's here, he must leave the meeting. Or we must call in Security of Parliament to take him out.
Well, I'm not aware of any,
Chair, I was almost hoping that we should have had this discussion behind closed doors, Chair. I just think it's important that we should raise the fact that these are open meetings. I don't disagree with my comrade, but my fear is if we went out of here with the impression that South Africans were not allowed to come to this meeting, regardless of who they are, it would create a wrong precedent. I don't have a problem if that young man is here. If I'm going to tell him the truth, I'd rather look him in the face and tell him the truth. So I just want for the record, Chair, that you and I and all of us are not accused of closing a public space. That's just the point that I thought I'd raise, Chair.
Well, he's not here. Well, before I give my comrade team, I just want to indicate, comrades, I'm sure in your packs you have this thick correspondence from FDA. And I'm deliberately acknowledging it because in terms of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities Act of Parliament, Section 25, they have certain rights of reply. I don't know whether they have forwarded this correspondence in terms of this act to the Secretary, because I think the Secretary referred to in that section is the I suspect is a secretary to Parliament, which is that any person other than a member who is aggrieved by anything said by anyone in the House or in the committee has a right to make written submissions on the issues that affect them. And once submitted to the secretary, it will then be referred to the said committee, which can then cause that submission to be published. And the submission is fully and squarely on the issues that we discussed in November last year. But whether the rebuttals are right or wrong, we are not able to say at this point, save to say that we are merely acknowledging them so that if they are watching, they should know we formal letter to us, we have received it, and that's it. All right. Yes, comrade.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you again for the opportunity. Chair, if I may just start by agreeing with your sentiments and echoing our deep condolences to the members of the SAPS and ARPID and everybody here who represents the SAPS for the tragic killings in Mobile, and we stand in solidarity with you. Chair, I'd also like to say that I had the pleasure of shortly after our new president was elected by meeting him on the floor of the House, and I congratulated him on his election, and I assured him that SCOPA would continue, and the words I used were bashing away hard, and he encouraged me to carry on without let up. So the president has sent me here today to make sure we get to the truth. So I certainly hope you'll all cooperate with that and give us the answers we need. Chair, we left off in November with tasking the SAPS and CETA with a lot of...
Just a minute.
Yes, sure.
I'm sorry, Honourable. I don't want to spoil your day. You said there was a report that was circulated. It is called CETA Rogue Unit. It has got employees of CETA that have got, who are quite willing to come and confess or tell us quite a number of things. I know that it has not been printed yet. I've given it to Ben Carney because I received it.
Talk closer to the mic.
When I say that I received it through coming from one member who was trying to make us aware that there's these members from CETA, we call it the CETA Rogue Unit, and who has got complaints. Now we are trying to print it out, but we are going to raise it in the meantime as we raise questions after. We just wanted to you to be aware, if you're not aware of that particular report.
All right. No, I'm not. I was not aware. But it's fine. Let it be printed. In the meantime, let us continue.
Chair, thank you. Chair, obviously I have a particular strategy and a train of thought here, so if we could proceed on that and then discuss other matters later, and I may well traverse that area that Honourable Boy is referring to. Chair, I'm going to try and be as precise and as concise as I can, but when we left last time, we asked the SAPS to come back to us on a number of issues, and we have in our possession a letter of response detailing about five particular issues. I don't want to delve into every one. I more want to highlight what's not there. Okay? And what isn't there was a full description of the trip in 2011 to the United Kingdom. We specifically asked for an explanation of that RFID trip, who paid for it, who went along, what subsistence allowances were paid, and specifically, that was the, I'm sure you'll all remember, that was the trip that related to the Old Trafford visit, which was displayed vividly in photographs. And I was hoping that we would get a full response on that, because that is that trip that specifically raised the suspicions about the connection between members of the procurement services at the SAPS and FDA. So I'm a bit disappointed that we haven't got a response on that. So my first question is, first of all, why don't we have a response on that? We did request it. And then the second question is the two gentlemen that were pictured in the photograph at Old Trafford were members Arendt and Masugo. And the question I want to ask the Commissioner is, have either of them since November come forward and said that they indeed paid for the trip to Old Trafford themselves, that they paid for the stadium tickets, the visit to the trophy room, the personalised T-shirts or the soccer shirts? Has that happened at all? Have they tried to clear their name in any way? Can we start there, Commissioner?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Maybe firstly, let me apologize for the omission of the response. We will avail a document clarifying it today we have, but for now, with the permission of the Chair, I'll just ask General Skeeter to provide the responses.
No, wait, we say the...
Can I proceed, Chair?
No. You said the document is here.
Which you have.
Yeah.
An explanatory note.
No, it's fine. Give it to us. We'll make copies now.
Thank you.
We have we brought the claims along, sir, so we can submit the claim. But I would like to respond just on the question.
But no. I'm saying if you have the document, can we have a copy?
No, those are the notes. I have the claims with me and the approval from the minister. It was an official trip. I have it.
All right. Fine.
I don't want to get us bogged down in this. We all know it was an official trip. What I'm getting to is, was there any allowance given by the SAPS to members, Arendt and Masugo, to... In other words, were they given an entertainment allowance to go to Old Trafford and get a game and get into the trophy room, which I believe is an expensive exercise, and give personalised shirts? Did the SAPS give them an allowance for a junket like that, or was that on their own pocket? And if it was on their own pocket, have they produced... I would imagine if I was either of them, I would immediately, after that news release, would come out and say, hang on a second, here are my credit card payments or my bank statements that showed that I paid for it myself, because that is what FDA allege. FDA allege that those members paid for themselves. So I'm looking for assistance from you as to which is true. Did the SAPS pay for it, or did they pay for it, or have you received nothing? Thank you. It's a very simple, quick answer, and then we can move on.
No. I think General Skete actually wants to respond to that question. Yeah. Can you proceed?
Yes. Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Indeed, after the first the previous appearance, we had interaction with him. We called them in, and the response is as follows. They were interviewed in order to obtain and verify information relating to two aspects in essence. Firstly, I must say, and as you said, it was an official trip, and yes, you do receive daily allowance. If you, in relation to the Manchester game, per se, because that's the essence, both officials indicated that they themselves purchased and paid for the T-shirts outside in the stadium in Manchester where their surnames were also printed on. And then the question was asked, who paid for the tickets? Because that is the essence of your question. According to both officials, the tickets were arranged by a certain Mr. Bayard from Unisys. And it was Brigadier Masuku and Colonel Arendt who indicated this. Obviously, we will also obtain statements, but that was in a specific interview.
Are Unisys provides services to the SAPS, is that correct?
Yes, they did, sir.
So suppliers organized tickets for them to attend the game. That is their testimony.
The words which I wrote down was arranged for it, yes.
Okay. You understand that that is criminal action? And are you doing anything about it?
As we said, sir, we must first obtain appoint a person in terms of Regulation 8, and then start taking statements. Sir.
All right. Well, I certainly think that we need to have a follow-up on that, and I'm certainly sure that our colleagues at Outward will be taking specific note of this, because we cannot have a situation where two officials have admitted that they got tickets to a soccer game organized by a supplier. Okay. All right. Now, let's move on then. You provided us with a long list of all the forensic all the case numbers where forensic equipment was used. That was to test the justification for all equipment. And thank you for that information. And it was voluminous, and I appreciate getting it. I note that in 2012-2013, the usage of the equipment only amounted to 18% of the time, and that in the most recent year it only amounts to 30% of the time. Is there any reason why equipment that we spent in excess of, because I also note from your report, we started at a figure of 3573 in that range of items that have been purchased, and it actually jumped to 4,229, something like that. Why are we only using that equipment 30% of the time at the maximum level? And does that not ask the question of whether or not it's just justified to buy all that equipment?
Honourable Chair, General Skete will continue to provide the response.
Honourable Chair, we gave multi-year figures, and I think it started at in the vicinity of 18, it went up. But it's a ratio indicator, a performance indicator, and it actually relates to the necessity to have the information. And I think it's for that reason, General Chairperson and General Sitole, that we should ask. We brought the forensic head of the Criminal Records Center. We brought the person along and the acting DEFCOM of forensics to explain that ratio. I've also asked the same question. I can explain it, but obviously they will indicate, because it also relates to the number of cases. And you don't use it in all cases, as you full know from your expertise. But will you allow General Kokwa or Mangali just to explain precisely? It's a very important aspect. It actually goes back to the demand process as well. Do you need it, or was it excessive, and so forth? But we had in-depth discussions with it, so I will appreciate if you can allow it, sir.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
As long as it's concise.
Yeah, as long as it's concise, yes.
General Ngoka, you can continue.
the people who have been brought here to make inputs, and they are sitting right at the back.
Thank you very much. Good morning. We are using this equipment, in particular the forensic life sources, not in all crime scenes that we attend. It is a fact that we use it in particular where we are looking for trace evidence and where we do photographic scenes. And it is given that the photographic scenes does not constitute 100% of all cases we are attending. And it is against that background that the utilization will seem to be low, but in actual fact, it is not low. It goes with the types of crime scenes that we attend and where it should be used.
Chair, thanks. That's a very general answer. Can I ask you a question? Are you aware that trace evidence is left on every single crime scene?
Yes, sir.
So why do you only use it on certain crime scenes, 30% of the time? Is this tied into our high crime rate?
Well, first we must say, the equipment, not all crime scene examiners carry this equipment. It's not 1:1. That's number one. Number two is that the forensic services is attending crime scenes that they've been called out to attend. And that relate to specific categories, which is prioritized crime. Serious and violence, it is women and children, and the trio crime. Of course, any other crime that we are activated, we will then attend. Now, when we go there, we use the information that we record to say, we use this type of equipment at every crime scene. Therefore, it does not say if we've got a full intent, we will use it at every crime scene. We will use it as the crime scene dictate to us what type of equipment is required to ensure that we are processing the crime scene.
How many officers do you have to do this around the country?
You mean the crime scene?
Yeah. How many officers
personnel
do you have who use this equipment around the country?
Well, we've got 2,408 crime scene examiner and crime scene laboratory technicians.
That's problematic because the commissioner told us after you phoned a friend commissioner last time, if I can remind you, that it was 3,200. Now it's 2,408. So who's got it right?
Well, Chair, the commissioner was not wrong. The figure is the 2,408 is talking to the crime scene examiner and crime scene laboratory technician. But we must remember, myself, as I'm sitting here, I am a trained...
I have to interrupt you there. So you just said a crime scene examiner and a laboratory technician. So what's the breakdown? How many are crime scene examiners and how many are laboratory technicians? Can you go to that, please?
Thank you, Chair. I'm saying we are having...
Can you just 3 centimeters back from the mic?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm allowed, just to be precise, my file is at the back because we didn't have the seat, so I can just give you a precise breakdown in that regard. But the huge number is the crime scene examiners.
My point is, once again, and you're saying 2,408 people or less than that actually use the equipment because a laboratory technician that doesn't use a light source, doesn't use the latex gloves, doesn't use the fingerprint powder, doesn't use all of that. They just sit in the laboratory. So we've got 4,229 items of kit purchased over a period of time, but there are only about 2,000, I'm assuming what you're going to tell us now, that actually use it. And this is exactly the point. Why do we need to buy all this equipment?
Well, while I'm looking for the figures, I must point out that the laboratory technician we are having does use the gloves, does use the equipment, because it is critical. Remember, we are processing fingerprints. We are lifting fingerprints.
Yeah, continue looking for the figures.
Can I request, Chair, that we afford him the opportunity, maybe after 2 or 3 minutes he can come back
if
the committee allows.
Okay.
I'm really trying to, I'm going to wind this section up. You can come back. It looks like whenever we ask this question, you need to phone a friend or ask the audience. I'm just trying to have a sense of humor. Okay, essentially, we have 4,229 items of equipment that we have purchased for around about 891 million rand over a period of time. We have got a 563 million rand contract to maintain all our latex gloves and our powder and all that sort of thing. I'm not exactly sure how you maintain it, but we've got this massive contract. And we use it 30% of the time, and probably less than 2,000 people actually use it. And then we contradict that with what the DNA project tells us, that is trace evidence is left on every single crime scene, and that the proper processing of trace evidence around the world has led to massive drops in crime rates, because criminals know when they get to court, if there's DNA evidence, the matter is over. And the lawyers don't even attack the DNA evidence, they attack the chain of custody. They leave the DNA evidence alone. So maybe that's where we are, just on a general point, is that we're spending far too much money on this and not getting the results. But anyway, that's a statement, and I'm going to wait for him to come back. I'd like to now go into the procurement. We asked you to provide us with the full list of procurement of all FDA products, and you provide us a one-pager. Unfortunately, it wasn't printed out this morning, but it relates to all the contracts from FDA. I don't know if you have that document in front of you, Commissioner. But you'll see that it starts with, it was a very frankly on the thing here. It's in 2015. It refers to the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines. I'm sure you're familiar with what I'm talking about, yeah? Refer to the purchase of forensic equipment, okay? And it states that bids were obtained, but it gives no indication why they went to FDA. All right, so it looks like these were quotations, 6 bids received, split award, FDA got 1, then that's the early one, then it says 5 bids received, ratified by NC. What is NC? National Commissioner. Okay, was that yourself or your, Baslani. All right, okay. That starts making sense. Okay, then we go, and so we go down, all the bids received. And then we get into the really heavy stuff, which is now when you talk about PCMs, EMS, FPS. Okay, that's the heavy-hitting stuff. But let me tell you what the major problem with this is. There are no numbers here. How can you provide us in Scopa? You know that we're public accounts. Okay, which means you deal with numbers. So how can you provide us a procurement list with no figures? We have no idea what any of this costs. Well, we do, but you're not telling us. We'd like you to tell us. Why are there no numbers on this procurement list?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Can just get the bullet clarified.
Thank you, sir. Firstly, it is such a massive document that we decided, and I must just ask the Divisional Commissioner, SCM, whether I think we brought along for your memory stick from BEC, BAC, minutes, contracts, but it's massive. You will also see that we had actually some issues. We had to send it, I think, split it when we forwarded to you for further, assessment, should you wish.
I get that, but if you look at this list, You know, we discussed this. You said you're going to have to send me CDs, and I understand that. It's a huge amount of documentation. But if you look at this list, there are about 10 columns. Is it really difficult to include an extra column just with the amount so that we know what this cost?
You will see it's quite over a period of time. What we brought along is we do have the amount that was spent on the different...
But then why were they not...
No, there? On the companies, not necessarily per contract. That is a more extensive exercise, I think.
It is not. I mean, hang on. If you have a contract, that contract has a monetary value, and that's his question.
Honorable Chair,
yeah.
We accept it as an oversight. We'll correct it
and
present
this. Let me get to the heart of this. The reason why we have an engagement with you, and this is not going to be the last engagement, because I know more questions are going to come out. You know, answers should provide answers, not more questions. Okay? We asked you to give us a full list of all the procurement. You sent a document through with no figures. So that means now I have to ask you, what are the figures? So your answer provides more questions. You're defeating the purpose here, both of you, unfortunately. I'm sure that your intentions are good, but unfortunately you're defeating the purpose. So, and also you will remember that we established that there was no proof, either from the CETA side or from the SAPS side, of a proper Section 217 of the Constitution process. In other words, a fair, equitable process. It all came down to FDA were the sole supplier, and that's it. And then eventually I got the good doctor from CETA to admit that it was Barney Fenter who walked into the boardroom and said, let's use FDA. That was the sole motivation behind using this company. Now, I know that Mr. Keating has written us a very stinky letter, and I feel a bit left out because I have not received a personal letter, because he'd be sending letters to everyone. And he alleges that there was a process. But no one can tell us what the process was. I don't want to go over that because we established it. So the point was, give us a list of all the procurements and tell us what you did and why. And once again, you're not doing it.
Can I just respond, sir? Sir, this was one of the intentions of the list that you will see. The first number of ones where procurement took place, bids were advertised. Meaning it went through an advertisement process. And a BEC and a BAC process. The big demand BEC, BAC advertisement. Where the so-called sole supplier comes in is in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you will see on the list, which are related to maintenance, and there's a license and so forth of PKM as well as the firearm permit system.
And we'll get to that. My point is the first items where it was not sole supplier, you're not giving us any assurance. Understand, General Skidder, we're talking about the contexture. We're talking about a UK trip where soccer tickets were purchased. We're talking about allegations of inside action in both departments. So this committee is asking for the assurance that that was not the case. So when you say 6 bids received, we need the details of why one bid was accepted or not. And I know you have that information. Okay. I just would have liked to see the numbers. Let's move on, but still on this. I want to just quickly touch on, and we can come around to it again, but these contracts here, going down, now this is the contract for, so the first one, the 12 months, sole supplier for FDOs, this was for FPS. Can you just tell us, what's FPS worth? How much did you pay for FPS?
Ask our divisional commissioner IT. She might have the figure with her here.
It goes into the hundreds of millions. I really thought you would remember such a significant number.
The FPS is, as far as I can recall, I'm doing it now, if I'm not mistaken, it's a license aspect.
Yes.
General Shezi, please correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't know whether that license is not in the vicinity of 18 million per annum. please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm doing it now from reading some time ago, in terms of the FPS, 18 million, in the vicinity of 18 million per financial year.
And how long has it been running?
It is now that FPS system where we pay FDA is 2 years, but previously it was with another supplier. It might have been more than 2 years. Maybe I can ask just my IT colleague to come in here, please.
Okay, I think it's important to know how long it's been running.
General Shez, you can come in.
Chairperson, thank you. I think we don't have a mic where I'm seated there for the opportunity. FPS started in 2009. I'm just verifying the total cost thus far. As of 2009, I'll provide it shortly. But it is from 2009, from a bigger contract of FCS, but the component of FPS is what I'm going to establish the figure. And
okay,
what
while we've got you there, what's PCAM been worth?
PCAM 1.1 and all the reincarnations of PCAM. What's that going to be worth? Do you know
that as well. I've got a whole breakdown of PCAM since its establishment to BITES, Chairperson. It's about 1 point something billion with a breakdown of what I have that I can provide.
But once again, these are all sole supplier. So you're talking about something worth 18 million rands worth a year, worth, and I'm sure it's a lot more than 18 million because FDA would not have developed that system for nothing. You had to pay them an initial amount and then a licensing fee.
I'm just referring to the FPS licensing fee payment.
Yes, I'm talking about what the actual IT infrastructure cost.
Because there was an expiry of a previous contract and then FDA altered.
This is what we need, because this comes into the billions now. We were dealing with a small change first with the forensics. Here we have, in front of Scopa, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 contracts, which I'm predicting safely will go into the billions of rands, where there was a sole supplier. And we proved and showed at the last Scopa hearing that there are multiple suppliers of this sort of equipment, not just one. And then we also got proof at last Scopa that there was no real reason, no compelling reason as to why FDA were the only ones used. But I'm going to come back to that just now. So I'll let General Shezi do her work there. So I'd like to now just move on to...
Just a minute.
Okay.
She has the figures.
All
right. Do you have your figure?
Yeah.
Chairperson, thank you, National Commissioner, Mr. Chairperson. I'm not certain to what extent you want me to provide this breakdown of the PCAM, but I have the information as well as the question that is coming from the Honourable Member.
Just when it started and how much it's cost so far.
Correct. April 2018, it was an open bid. It went via...
In 2018? 4 months from now.
2008.
Yeah, you said 18 anyway. All right, 2008.
In April 2008, the contract was, it went for a bid for publication, which was requesting the provision of ICT goods to SAPS for 3 years with an option to renew.
I'll
that
ask
was
for a
2008.
Figure.
It was awarded in February 2009. Two Unisys as a provider at a time. And it had a number of breakdowns from...
Sorry, can we ask for a figure? The date started in the figure.
General, don't explain it. Just give the figure. The figures.
That's what I'm doing, General.
We've only got 4 hours.
I know.
Check, and can I let the General find this information? We'll come back to it.
Well, she said she had the figures.
I do.
It doesn't appear so.
Then give us the figures, one number,
wait,
not explanation. No.
The total cost of that, Chairperson, which includes a Schedule D, is 1210519007.
So it was worth $1.2 billion in 2009, and it was for a two-year contract or three-year contract.
No, as until the end, the total cost within the PICAM contract from 2008 at the establishment until the end of December 2017.
Was that FPS or PICAM?
It's PICAM.
PICAM.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then what is the cost of FPS?
The FPS, Chairperson, was implemented in 2007 for the first time, and then the total cost to date. Chairperson, I verified the figures here. Doesn't look for the whole period since then. I've got here 18,019,947, but I'll confirm the establishment of the rebels just now.
Okay, so you'll come back to that. All right. Chair, if I may just move forward now, we can come back to the cost of the RT.
Just a minute.
Okay.
Officer, do you have your figures now?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks, Jefferson. Thanks, General. No, we have 248 lab techs, and we've got 2,160 crime scene examiners.
Chair, I want to just move on. We'll come back to General Shezi later. Chair, at our last engagement in November, various calls were made on CETA in particular not to make any further payments to FDA given the investigations that were ongoing with IPED, etc. And the CEO at the time gave us the assurance that no further money, that in fact that you would engage counsel to see what their advice was relating to further payments. Could you please advise what the advice of counsel was?
Thank you very much. On the payments alone, not the contract.
Well, the payments are linked to the contract.
Yeah. Okay. On the payments, it was understanding that the counsel said that we probably should pay. However, we should ensure that we are paying value for money by fully investigating all the activities that the supplier claims they have conducted, and particularly the contract that was signed.
Okay, in other words, you should establish or verify the services rendered.
Yes.
Okay. Was that done?
It's my understanding that it was done by one of our staff members.
How was that done? Did you go to every single police station in the country, all for 5,500?
Let me say,
if the equipment was actually checked?
No. So let me say this. The staff member says that it was done, but I've since asked those questions whether, in fact, he did that, and he did not do that.
Okay, so effectively we've got this equipment right across the 5,500 odd police stations in the country, if I'm correct, that's the number of police stations, more or less. 1,300. Okay. 1,300 police stations. Obviously, FDA technicians need to go to all these police stations and service the equipment, whatever that means. And this staff member just said it's been done. Who was the staff member?
A gentleman called Ernest Stipp.
Ernest
Stipp.
Ernest
Stipp.
Ernest Stipp.
S-T-I-P-P.
Did you receive that report from him and then make the payment? Did you make the payment? Did you authorize the payment?
Well, it was not me, but it was my CFO. I was not available there, but she would have done it while I was another.
Okay, so your CFO was here. So you weren't aware of the payment?
I became aware of the payment on the 29th of January. It was made on the 26th of January.
Okay. And is that when you raised the flag as to did we verify the services?
No, the discussions happened between myself and the rest of the team later, not immediately afterwards. I mean, the email was sent to me on the 29th. I picked it up later.
But I'm saying, is that when you asked the stubber person whether they went and actually did a verification.
So that was established much later, about 2 weeks later, yes.
About 2 weeks later, and you established that, in fact, no actual verification process
happened. The verification at all the stations for all the equipment was not done.
So what not was not done?
No.
So the taxpayer has no guarantee that any service was actually rendered, but we still paid, I think it was just shy of $1 million. Was it just shy of 11 million rand?
No, it was, for the Rothin, it was 10.84 million.
Now tell me, who authorized the CFO to make the payment?
The CFO used the powers that are with her, using the information based on my discussions with her, based on the information that was available to her, and also specifically based on a specific discussion that I was part of on the 19th of January with members of the SAPS.
Okay, so can you tell us, well, what was that conversation with the SAPS about?
Thank you. The conversation was initiated by myself in particular. It had to deal with the fact that, notwithstanding that we have eventually signed the service level agreement with the SAPS in December of 2017, we had not been paid at all. And I think that what was owed to us was about R1 billion. And during the period of December, we raised it to the board that, in fact, we were at a point where we were about to be unable to pay salaries. So I initiated a meeting with General Shays in particular to talk to her about some of the implications, to understand why we're not being paid, and also to establish some of the implications on that. So at the meeting, the agenda, where there were additional agenda items added, including the FDA roughing agenda items. We were quickly informed in that meeting that by General Skeeter that we had payments had started coming through and that he would take specific responsibility with the CFO of SAPS to ensure that we were paid. In particular, one of the payments that were made was with respect to us was with respect to the Sorothan contract.
Sorry, which contract?
The FDA contract.
Yes.
The attendance there, we were not going there to deal with legal matters. We were going there to deal with risk matters. So that's why my executive of risk was there, and financial matters, that's why my CFO was there. Because we're not dealing with legal matters, we did not have our head of legal. On the SAP side, we're counting about six or so members from the SAP's legal services, President General Skeeter, and then General Shezi. And we quickly dealt with the issue of FDA. It was made very, very clear to us by General Skeeter in particular that to the extent that we have been paid, if we don't pay FDA for maintenance and support services, we would specifically take responsibility for the collapse of the forensic services of SAPS. General Skeeter, in particular, raised, initiated, volunteered the case of Srini Divani and specifically said that if we don't pay and these people stop providing services, the case of Srini Divani would be a standard case in SAPS forensic. And we were left then with a choice of whether or not to pay, given that we had received the money from SAPS, or to take the responsibility for collapse of the criminal justice system. And it is my understanding in the discussion with the CFO, I was there in that meeting, and I confirm that it is my take, it is a take of my two executives that, in fact, that was the case. In the meeting that we had, a meeting 2 days ago with General, with the National Commissioner, and it is confirmed in that meeting that the General Skeeter thinks he did not tell us to pay, but he certainly confirmed that he volunteered the risk and said, pass that risk to us. And I must say that it's the very same risk that was also mentioned in at least two lawyers' letters that we received from FDA.
Okay, so
that is the basis under which my understanding that the CFO paid at the time.
All right. So I want to just refer you quickly to those lawyers' letters you spoke about. You received a letter from FDA attorneys Philip Detoy. You received two separate letters, actually. There was one that you were copied in on the 11th of December, and then there was another one that you specifically just to see to, but the one on 29 January. 11th of December was sent to yourselves and the National Commissioner. Now, I'd like to refer you to paragraphs. In paragraphs 5.1, 5.2, and 5.3, FDA refers to the Rofin services. 5.2 refers to the PCHEM services, and 5.3 refers to FPS. And in paragraph 6, and it points out what these services are for and what they do for the SAPS, those three paragraphs. And then, and it obviously points out how important they are. Then in paragraph 6 it says, it is therefore apparent that the services rendered by our client, that's FDA, are mission critical in every possible sense of the phrase. As such, and although ROFN and SPS are rendered to CETA, SAPS prosecutory institutions and ultimately the public derive benefits from these services. It speaks for itself that SAPS prosecutorial institutions and the public are also the main beneficiaries of the PCHEM services. To our understanding and from a technological perspective, the rendering of PCHEM services is also depending on rendering of FPS services. And then paragraph 7 says, it accordingly stands to reason that it would not serve the interests of any and all interested parties, least of all the members in a crime-ridden society, for rendering of the above mission-critical services to be disrupted due to challenges of contracts and feuds between contracting parties, especially where such actions are based on the allegations that are devoid of any truth or merit. Did you regard that as a threatening letter?
No.
You did not regard
no,
that as
No, not from Mr. Kitu.
From yourself?
No, to the extent that these paragraphs came from him, we did not accept them. We accepted them as threats, but we did not accept his basis.
Do you acknowledge that stating that if our services are not paid for, we can collapse the PCHEM system, the FPS system, as a veiled threat?
It is a veiled threat. What we had done, what we subsequently did, in fact, about a day or so later after receiving this, we wrote to SAPS and requested confirmation of whether or not these services are required, and for SAPS to essentially give us a view on the basis that they'd had received the same letter. That was on the 12th of December.
Okay, so effectively, and this comes again back to our first hearing on this matter, I raised the issue of the proprietary rights of PCHEM, FPS, because the AG had raised these issues. So now we have a scenario where an individual, Mr. Keith Keating, who owns FDA with Mr. Mufumadi, have the ability to turn off systems used by the SAPS. Is that effectively where we are?
Yes, because he repeated it at the, about a week ago. That's
yeah.
Right.
So effectively we have an individual who effectively has captured the security cluster, captured the SAPS. He can turn the SAPS systems off because we don't know who holds the ability to do that on a computer. And General Shazi is confirming for us that we've spent billions of rand buying this stuff. So this is akin to buying a car, taking a maintenance plan. When you don't pay the maintenance plan, they come pick up the car.
The letter that we received now in February,
yeah.
Chapter 10 of it,
yeah.
is quite specific, because we have since then
since the one payment that we made on the FDA, we have not paid him. So he wrote us a letter. And just to put it on the record, he says, given CETA's failure to pay, CETA is hereby notified that FDA is no longer obliged to render the services in question. It is self-evident that if FDA were to suspend the rendering of services, then SEPs, the criminal justice system, and ultimately the public at large stand to suffer grave prejudice. He sent to us about a week or so ago.
Okay. Now, in the light of all of this information, which is frankly incredibly shocking, do you feel that at that meeting where General Skitter was there, that you were being pressurized to make the payments to FDA?
Absolutely. Yes.
It is absolutely your feeling.
It is absolutely my feeling.
Were there any other senior SAPS members there who also pressurized you?
The pressure specifically came from General Skitter.
From General Skitter.
Yes.
Okay. Is it true that the SAPS are CETA's main client?
Yes, they are.
So if the SAPS decides to withhold your funding, it places you in a very precarious financial position.
Yes, it does, as it was in January when we were at a point where we couldn't pay salaries.
Did you feel that you were being blackmailed in any way? If you didn't make this payment, you wouldn't receive the money?
I can't say so, but I felt that, well, I can't link the two things, the two facts I have is that if at that point what was in debt, about R1 billion, was got to a point where CETA was unable to meet its obligations.
Okay. All right, now that's fine. Okay, so
I have to ask because there's
such General,
sorry, who's running?
General, I apologize for this.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. The situation is that so you're telling us that in that meeting the CFO must have also felt that pressure.
She's confirmed it.
She's confirmed. Is
yes.
The CFO here?
The CFO is here.
The CFO is here. Where is the CFO? Okay. Can you confirm that you felt that pressure and that's why you made the payment?
Yes, I can confirm that.
Okay. So that's confirmed for the record. Now, you, however, didn't feel that pressure and you didn't authorize the payment. Is that correct?
Yeah. I felt the pressure. I just said I confirm.
I'm sorry. Well, you didn't.
But I was not
there. With all due respect to the CFO, you didn't act on that pressure.
No, I mean, I was not there when the decision to pay was made. But
no, fair enough.
I
Now, did the board authorize that payment? Were the board in any way involved in authorizing that payment?
No, the board was not involved.
Were the board not involved as well? Okay. So effectively, we have a scenario, just to wrap this up, where at our last meeting, this committee enjoined SAPS and CETA not to make any payments to FDA, pending the winding up of the ARPID investigation and. Many of my colleagues, most notably Honorable Smith, was making that point. And you wanted to stick to that, is that correct?
Absolutely.
And you took counsel that you would be working on the contract, but maybe withholding payments in the interim. And then you were put under severe pressure by the SAPS, which led to the cracking of the situation and
yes.
FDA being paid.
Yes.
That is the scenario.
Yes.
And do you believe that the letters sent by Keating led to some of that pressure?
I don't know whether there's any relation, but as far as we are concerned, what the pressure, that the effective pressure, this letter doesn't matter because we're probably going for litigation.
All right.
But the effective pressure was the one from...
Okay, and do you agree that it's alarming that one person has the ability to turn off SAPS systems and effectively that the SAPS were very concerned about that?
I believe it's alarming that one person has that ability.
Because you're the CETA guys.
Yes.
Somebody should not have that power.
No.
Only the state should have that power.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I want to now just proceed to, you are currently in the middle of an investigation at CETA.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And that's, how is that investigation going?
It is still ongoing. We still have not received much since, in December. We engaged the formal, to be specific, post this session of SCOPA, we have instituted a direct investigation of FDA. Remember previously when we came here, we were investigating our general supply chain system. Since the SCOPA, we are now looking specifically at potential criminal activity within CETA in relation to FDA.
Can you wind down?
Yes, Chair, I'm getting there. I looked at the time. I thought you'd be on my case soon. But I hope everybody's that's riveting listening. This investigation has been conducted by a forensic firm, am I correct? Is it yielding results? How many people have been dismissed and or fired and or resigned since they started their work?
We have touched about 108 people.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to look at my data.
I know you sent us a confirmation.
Yes, we did.
I don't have it printed out.
Yeah. And we have most of them. This is around our SCM. If we can just look at this data. So it's 108 people, 79 of them in our SCM. Our SCM has 84 people.
Mm-hmm.
We have dismissed 8 people, of which we have mentioned before that a number of those cases have been referred to the SEPs and HOCs. The 22 people resigned, 5 of them during the investigations, and then 16 of them when the disciplinary cases had started. We've issued 2 final written warnings post-disciplinary. There are 2 disciplinary hearings going on.
So what's the total amount?
So it's 108 people that we have looked at in total.
So would you say the investigation so far conducted by the forensic firm has been going well?
Absolutely. Okay. Because I can just confirm that the almost everybody who was involved, either in the line of business or in supply chain, who was involved in initiating the original business case in 2012, has been charged, and they've either been dismissed or they left the organization.
I've got to wind up. I see in one of your letters that you remain committed to fighting corruption, and that's great. Are there any in your setup? Is the board supporting you in this investigation? Are you experiencing any challenges there?
The board has been supportive. I think my challenge right now is that as we fight our people, as we dismiss people, I'm under personal attack right now, and I thought the board could have provided more support earlier. But we had a discussion yesterday, and I've appealed for that support from the board, particularly on the counterattacks that I'm encountering.
Chair, just 2 questions. The chair of the board is here, Mr. Nomvete, yes. Mr. Nomvete, are you committed as the board, representing the board, that you will continue these investigations and continue the cleanup of CETA that has been such a problem for so long?
Yes, we are more than willing and committed to assist.
Do you have any plans to disrupt the process and start the process again, or do you want to let it go to its conclusion?
In fact, we are not having any plans of disrupting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been our fervent focus for the past couple of years. We started with HCM, and then we went to the procurement space. And we are aware that once we touch the procurement space, hence you are receiving all these rogue stories, but some of the people are already implicated.
When you talk about this rogue story, are you talking about members of CETA that are cooperating with suppliers, and this is the rogue thing you're talking about?
No. I'm talking about, maybe digressing, that I received a complaint on the 4th of December from most of the affected employees that are affected by the investigation.
Yes.
Yes.
And what do they say?
Well, they make all kinds of allegations against the forensic team, against the executive team, against...
And you understand that people that have been dismissed are aggrieved and will come up with anything?
Naturally.
So what sort of credence are you giving to those claims?
I asked my ethics committee to look into the veracity of some of the allegations, because we have an obligation to do so. That process is ongoing. We had the initial report. I've got the chairman of the ethics committee.
All right. I think you need to know that SCOPA is watching this very, very carefully. And we see a system, we see a lot of departments that do absolutely nothing. They come here with lamentable stories about written warnings and that sort of thing. SCOPA likes to see action. And we see now department finally, actually an entity finally doing something. All right? But we're also aware that when you dismiss people, people get upset and then they start forming agendas, and they start forming camps, and they start forming plans to get rid of the people, try to get rid of them. I've got gentlemen sitting at the back there who are all suspended for a point of view, point of time, because of that. So I want to just place the board on notice. Please, let's make sure we're all in this together to fight the scourge that is afflicting CETA. We want to see CETA get better, and let's make sure that the board supports that, please.
If I may indulge, Chairman, through you, that specifically with this contract of Rofin, as we might as early as 2013, I was also targeted when I questioned the single sole supplier.
Okay,
so it's been ongoing.
Chair, I know you want to get me out of here. General Shezi had some information for us. Have you found out what the other one was worth, General Shezi?
Chairperson, thank you. Correct. The establishment of FPS was at 178,756,000. Today spent is at 246,390,000. It includes the development and the hardware cost to roll out. Thank you.
Chair, I have some questions based on the procurement of that. I think if we can do a second round and I come around again. Except for the fact that, once again, we have a large amount of money, Commissioner, to a sole supplier, and I question those figures, okay? But we really need to get the reasons from SAPS why a sole supplier was used for PCAM and for that. And then also, PCAM is at various incarnations, Commissioner. You may not be aware of this, but it's been redeveloped every few years. We want real reasons why it has at great cost. Okay. Thanks, Chair. I'm done then. Thank you.
All right. No, General Scott, you will get an opportunity to respond to some of these issues. Comrades, Comrade Boy, and now let's go to KZN and then Mpumalanga. Let's brief so that we can have 2-3 rounds, 4 rounds, whatever, just to make sure it goes round and round.
Good morning, Chairperson.
No, after him.
Yesterday we were cautioning KZN, stop being kingmakers. Can you stop that one? General Stoll, good morning. I congratulated you because of your appointment. Can you make me at ease? Last week, IP told us that you never followed up in the manner that you promised this committee. You have delegated two nice, good-looking gentlemen, and up until last week, there was no result. What's going on, General? We want results, not a long story. Why is there no improvement between your relationship and IP to solve this problem? That's my first question.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think firstly from here, we went to meet with IPIT, the top management. We discussed the question of relationship, and we also agreed on a working relationship. From that point of view, I'm convinced our relationship is intact. I'm not aware of the tarnished part up to this far, except the fact that the exchange of information that they need is also governed by other policies and legislations. If we do it within that, then it's fine. Thank you, sir.
How you're talking English, General? That is English. Kisikhuwa. And I don't really go along that line of thinking. You made a commitment to Parliament, and quite clearly you're making that commitment to legislators who are fairly aware of the law. I did tell you from day one that I have written many of these laws, so I know what I'm talking about. You made a commitment, General. You didn't tell us all the nice stories you're telling us today. Can you tell me about why have you not been able to solve and give strong directives so that IPIT can go ahead? Because IPIT for itself to come to Parliament was because of lack of cooperation with the police. And new brooms sweep clean. And that's what you said to us. Up until today, even in your own statement, you're not telling us what have you done. I mean, top management is seated right there at your back. And it's top management that reported to Parliament. It was not juniors. Get it quite clear. Sokotam right, sir. He came and reported to us here. And he related the story that even on the day as he was entering here, he picked up the phone to try to make sure that the sequence has been explained properly and the expectation has been met in terms of what parliamentary commitment was. Now, I'm asking as a parliamentarian, I'm not representing IPG. I'm asking, and I hope you understand that you've got no duty to mislead Parliament. But if you do that, in terms of the PFMA, it will be me and you on the floor. Because you can't mislead us. Why have you not done and stick to your commitment, General? Let's leave the long stories. I have told the chairperson that this year I don't want love stories. I want you to tell me directly why have you not kept to the commitment you made to Parliament.
Honorable Chair, when we were here, IPED wanted cooperation on the investigation which was at hand here. It was the investigation against General Patla. I gave all the cooperation they needed with regard to that. I am not aware of other specific cases. There may be specific cases, but the commitment that I gave, I stood by it. Thank you.
Chairperson, now I'm going to appeal to your soul. Like we were together in that meeting, and you were together listening to IPED, and quite clearly the general is misleading us. He's not saying today that I've done 1, 2, 3 to keep to that commitment. He's talking about other cases. I'm not involving any other cases, Chairperson. I'm direct on his commitment that he made it in front of you and he made it to IPED. I'm not representing IPED. I'm representing what he promised Parliament. That's all I'm interested to know, Chairperson. And I have made it quite clear this year that I'm not interested in the long stories. I want a commitment that he made to Parliament that between himself and IPED, things will be rolling by today. We'll be talking about case A, case B, case C. Everything has been done. But so far, Chairperson, listening to Mr. Sokota last week, that progress has not been made as being expected. There's nobody arrested. And when I read this FDI whatsoever report, I've read it, Chairperson. Kitty's still on a wavelength of accepting or dismissing the allegations and dismissing quite clearly the role that IPED is playing. Now, I'm asking the general just on those pieces. I want results. I don't want the long stories. He is misleading us now, Chairperson. You can judge me or you can just direct me that what do we do from here. Because I'm expecting him to have given results today, not long stories.
Yeah, I think, General, maybe to move to the specifics, there were a number of cases that IPED spoke to last week around which they were awaiting information or around which they depended on cooperation from the SAPS. And we specifically asked, but you have a new national commissioner. I think there was acknowledgement that with the new national commissioner there is improvement in relationship. But what he's asking is that improvement must translate into actual deliverables, that on this case, this is where we are. On this case, this is where we are. It might as well be so that information has not yet been given. But what we need is to have a clear process, identifiable process of interaction that gives guarantee and confirmation that requests are attended to and not just ignored. I think that is the point. So that
That's the bottom line of it, Chelsea.
That's it.
We want results.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Can I, with your permission, give legal services to relate to all requests that has been given to us by IP from the date we were here and then to date, and we will give the status of all those particular matters. But the first thing that started, I called IP and I said, let us sit down after we move here. And I said, let us discuss the processes so that I support, how do we support you? But with your permission, can I allow General Khan to talk to the requests that are made by APIT?
Right. General Khan?
Khan, you can continue.
Okay.
Morning, Chair, National Commissioner, honorable members. I'm going to go through a list of requests. Maybe a little bit of background, Chair, if you'd allow me. I would very quickly give you the background. Chair, as far back as 2017, a nodal point was established in order to provide assistance to IPID in respect of the various requests that we were receiving. The liaison would have been between myself and Mrs. Seseko. And I can place on record that we have been talking to each other and providing information as the information became available. Chair, I have a list of requests totaling plus minus 18 requests. Some of them relate to information requested. Some of them relate to documents requested. Some of them relate to requests for interviews or consultation with members of the service. Chair, I'm not going to go, unless I'm required to do so, I'm not going to go into each one of them. Safe to say, in those areas where information was received, like, for instance, I'm just going to quote an example. We were requested on the 9th of June, when I say we, the National Commissioner, of course, to make available records and photographs as well as SAP 96 and so forth relating to OR Tambo CAS. I don't know what the particular matter is about, but I just want to indicate that those documents were made available. I will go on, Chair, and indicate that in terms of wanting consultation or in terms of interviewing witnesses, such requests were received. One of them being wanting to interview senior managers in the SAPS. We've corresponded with Mr. Seseko to indicate that these managers are willing to come to the consultation or be interviewed, but they asked to be represented. That process is being followed. State Attorney is on board, and we've asked State Attorney to liaise with IPID's attorneys as far as this is concerned. Chair, that interview, I think we've received correspondence from the CEO, Mr. McBride, indicating that it needs to happen in the near future. Chair, on the issue of information relating to threat assessment, the National Commissioner did respond to IPID on that. On the issue of information relating to the personal file or the personal records of KGB, Captain Shabalala, the National Commission has responded to that. The issue of iView, the National Commissioner has written to the IG asking IG to investigate or to give some kind of indication to the National Commissioner in terms of whether he could make those documents available. As far as the declassification of information relating to dockets, as far as General Mdluli is concerned, there has been correspondence to General Matakata, the head of DPCI, to assist in that regard. Chair, I must say not all the requests have been finalized at this point in time, but there has been correspondence very recently, I think as of last week, in terms of the request for information, personal records of General Ngobo as well as General Chika. Clarity was needed in terms of whether it's a CAS number or a reference number which request we forwarded to Mr. Siseko, and he responded indicating that it's a CNN number or CCN number. And Chair, I think as far as my recollection goes and in terms of what I have in front of me, that is where we are, Chair.
All right. Okay.
It's right there at the back.
All right. Just a minute. Let me allow the Commissioner to add, and then we'll go to the Head of Investigation.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. There's one other matter which relates to causing delays, and that requires also clarification. The case is asking for information, but the case is with DPCI. I think that is firstly, we cannot give information to IPIT on a case that is with DPCI. So that is one matter that we need to clarify. But further to that, the information that IPIT want us to declassify got lost from the SAPS files. And we are informed is in the possession of DPCI. Now, the first thing from the prescript side, I can't declassify information which got lost. And two, no one has got the authority to be in possession of classified information before it is declassified. And in such a case, I had to ask the national head of Hawks to investigate how did the information leave our files to DPCI before we can declassify it. So that's a point of understanding that we just want to put to say if there's delay, but there's full cooperation. Thank you.
Right, Mr. Sissoko. Your boss is here, Mr. McBride. Maybe let's refer to him. If he defers to you, then that's fine. That will be his decision.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The details Mr. Sissoko will deal with. I think generally, I think Parliament has been misled here. There is a desire not to cooperate with IPED or any investigation of this nature. It's happened for many years on the Mdluli matters going over and over and over again and recent stuff. In fact, modus operandi of SAPS is to use classification to cover up criminality within SAPS. And they close ranks when they do it. Like General Khan is saying some of the stuff was given, some of the stuff. None of those requests were given. But I'll ask Mr. Sissoko to go through them thoroughly. We have here a general state of non-cooperation. It's either obfuscation, hampering our investigations, or just delaying. That's the general trend. In fact, in some instances, decisions are taken by senior management not to cooperate. They just take that decision. So I would ask General Khan to be a bit more forthright with this parliamentary committee.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members and colleagues. Yes, it is true that we met with the National Commissioner and his deputies after the first engagement with the committee on the 6th of December, and we mapped a way forward. And it's also true that there is some information that was given to us subsequent to those engagements. But the crux of the matter is there is important information that we requested that to date has not been provided to us. Now, just to give a short background, after the appointment of General Matakata as the acting head of the DPCI, we had an engagement with her and an MOU on working together, especially on these critical investigations. We also had an MOU with the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence, and we agreed to work together on investigations relating to crime intelligence. As a result of those engagements, the Office of Inspector General of Intelligence made us aware about the investigation that DPCI was seized with regard to General Mdluli. We agreed on doing a joint investigation in that regard. In the PEC that we sent to the committee, there's a letter that was sent to the SAPS, signed off by the Executive Director, Mr. McBride, on the 18th of August, 2017. Requesting SAPS to provide us with information with regard to this matter. After we had joined with DPCI. Now, DPCI had been requesting this information since 2013 from SAPS. The issue of how the documents came into possession of DPCI was explained, and SAPS crime intelligence, there was a process even in those years where SAPS and DPCI head then, General Dramat, engaged on this issue. And there was an agreement, and a person in the person of General Henkel was appointed to facilitate the process of handing over those documents. The documents were then handed over to DPCI, but however, they were not declassified. So the issue remained the issue of declassification. Even prosecutors wrote to the police management to have this document declassified. To date, those documents were not declassified. When we wrote to the SAPS that we request this document to be classified, the documents were already with the SAPS. But then the issue came when they said the very same process that questioning how DPCI came to be in possession of that. And these issues were already explained. Now, General Rulofse has a file full of correspondences, even explanation that are required by SAPS, which was communication between SAPS and DPCI in that regard. So that is why we cannot understand why this issue still come even today when we're requesting this. I wrote to the SAPS on the 23rd of January. In my communication, I sent to National Commissioner, I copied General Vuma, General Tsumani, General Nsia, General Ngobo, and General Khan. And my communication was very clear. I attached annexures to the communication. These annexures relate to correspondences that we had sent earlier, including this one of August, and the other one relating to the other matter of July. And these correspondences were requesting the same issues. But in my correspondence, I still requested that they provide us with declassified information to enable us to continue with investigation. It also related to issues relating to KGB, Captain KGB Shabalala. And in my correspondence, I was very clear because we also wanted specific information. For instance, some of the issues I raised in my letter of the 23rd, I asked SAPS to respond to these issues. Who authorized and approved the reappointment of Captain General Shabalala to the SAPS in September 2016, who approved Captain Shabalala's conversion to an agent program in September 2016, who authorized payment as an agent while he was in prison in May 2013, why General Captain Shabalala was handled by a warrant officer, Nembuili, who is in IT section and who is not responsible to handle agents. Why Captain Shabalala was not removed from SAPS personal system after his dismissal in 2013. These are the issues that I raised in my letters. To date, I have not received answers to these questions, which are crucial to our investigation. Now, yesterday, I received a letter from General Tsumani. And the letter says basically that with respect to that investigation on KGB Shabalala, they are unable to accede to our request based on Section 202 of the Criminal Procedure Act, because it's against public policy and it's not in the public interest. Now, our view is that, in fact, it's in the public interest that we are provided with this information. They also indicated that is because the information we are requesting includes informants. But our request is very clear, Chairperson. We never requested information relating to informants. We're requesting personal file because we want to understand how was Captain Tshabalala reenlisted in the police. Obviously, someone must have approved that. So that is part of the investigation. So that is not forthcoming. So basically, with the last correspondence, that they are not going to give us that that information. Now, there is also matters relating to IVU investigation that we are busy, which we've highlighted to the committee. There has not been a response. The response I got from SAPS management, General Zuman in particular, first was that we must give them time. You know, they will give us the information. It never came through. I had personal discussions with General Zumani, with General Khan. There has been promises that the information will be provided, but it has not been provided. Now, I was actually shocked when I received the letter yesterday that they cannot accede to our request based on Section 202 of the Criminal Procedure Act. The Criminal Procedure Act, Section 202, is not meant to protect criminality. It's not meant to do that. Now, it's something that we will, if it means we must litigate on it, we'll definitely do that, because it cannot be accepted that when we want information about criminality, then we are informed that it's against public policy and it's not in the public interest. Is SAPS trying to tell us that is it in the public interest that crime that is happening in SAPS is not exposed? You know, so those are our concerns. The reason we're saying there's a refusal is because these requests have been going on for months and months, and we don't have anything that says here is information. No. It's only promises and promises.
Okay. All right. Yes, Comrade.
General, your representative gave us lovely stories and love letters. IPT is giving us detail. So you can, you didn't even tell her that there are some lost files, because she couldn't even report those things to us. She wasted our time. Can you tell us now, what are you going to do? Because she's wasting our time. I can't listen to her. You must tell us, because you made the commitment. And in terms of the PFMA, you are the accounting officer. And as an accounting officer, I hope you have read now the PFMA. It's not like the day one. You do know that we use the PFMA in SCOPA. And as an accounting officer, can you tell us, what are you saying now? We're just asking them to repeat an exercise. But the concern of the committee has always been that IPIT is being treated like an isolated child in the institutions by people like you. We've got no regard for the law, no respect. They keep on isolating that institution. But they then say to us when they come here in good smiles, we're fighting corruption with you, which is wrong. And I warned you on that day that you don't come to us and tell us nice stories. We will smile with you when we smile, but we want results. Tell us, General, what to do now, because you have misled Parliament.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me start with the case of General Mdluli. The information that IPIT wants to be declassified, I will declassify it after verification. How did it go to DPCI
General,
before it was declassified.
Chairperson. General.
Yes.
Let's not repeat ourselves. This exercise you want to send me into, I don't want to go to garden court in church. I'm here. I want you to give us an answer. Simple, straightforward. What have you done? Because these allegations they are making, they have made it on that day. And you were seated right there smiling, telling us that you are going to solve this problem. Now you want to read the law for me. I'm a lawmaker. I'm not a public representative. I'm a lawmaker. I deal in terms of the law. Tell us exactly what are you going to do. If you don't have any capacity, say so. We'll ask the minister to come and tell us. If you don't have capacity, we've got your minister to come and tell us. That can't he do it himself? Because they are misleading us now. Don't relate the story. She has done enough. He has done enough. I want an answer because there's quite a lot of members here who want to ask questions. I said to you, I just want results. If you can't, if you don't have capacity, tell us quite clearly in Parliament, I don't have capacity to declassify. And I'm not going to do that. Tell us. It's at the cost of your own salary. And at the cost of your own job. To be fair to you.
Chair, I will convene an urgent meeting with the IPIT, and they will sort all this, the information they need on the spot, and will then give results, because we do have the records. They've indicated what they want, and then I'll meet with them, and we will resolve the matter on the spot, and I give them the information they need.
You see, you are a Christian.
Yes.
I'm also a Christian. I go to church. I pray. I pray, Chief. I pray for the goodness of my country. The present president who I'm serving, as I've always done, loyally like you, and that I've taken an oath for, is a very loyal person. What do I say to you? Because they're misleading us now. You, on the day you left here, you called a meeting, and they narrated their story like loyal children of our country. She knows it. She's got thick files. But you couldn't solve the problem. What do you think is going to happen beyond this meeting? What is going to happen, General? General, we don't have time to play. We are simple people. We come from the streets. We canvass our people to vote for this government. You are telling us about stories that can take another. From 2013, changing of generals and everything, the story has been the same with the IPIT. That you are not putting evidence in front of them for them to be able to charge people. And we want to charge people, unless you want us to take you to the police station and charge you for misleading Parliament. Give me for the last time, before I give the chairperson the rule, that what is the purpose of that meeting? Because the meeting you have held it with them, and there's no results. They're frustrated that they're seated there. And they think that parliamentarians, we must continue listening to you because they're misleading us.
Chair, I will provide the information that IPIT wants, and then I will interact directly with Mr. Sissoko, who wants the information.
All right. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I think there's a number of issues we must mention so you can understand the duplicity which is at play here. There's been an attempt by the Crime Intelligence and National Commissioner to involve Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence in this matter to intervene. For some reason it failed. The meeting was supposed to be on Monday. So in other words, any reason to obfuscate. On our MOU with the Inspector General of Intelligence, General Nwabo and the National Commissioner went to see the IGI to find out details about our MOU with them and how the task team is set up. There's also been other pressure on IGI. And the issue with the Joint Standing Committee is to get
a decision or resolution that says IPED can't investigate CI. Similarly, there was pressure put on the IGI on the MOU that it makes it impossible for us to work together on crime intelligence, on corruption in crime intelligence. The document that went missing, this security breach document, is the document which a whole counter investigation against IPED was based on, where millions of rand was spent when they called people from the Northwest to counter investigate a supposed breach at General Patlani's house. That's the document that's gone missing. As to whether it existed at all in the first place is another story altogether. This is the document on which the whole investigation began. It's now missing. It's gone from this general to that general to that general to that general. A paper trail from 2017. And then suddenly, missing, gone. No action taken against anyone. And it's supposed to be a classified document. It's gone missing. How does a classified document, which you must keep in a particular way, go missing? It's a document on which you base the beginning of an whole investigation, or so you say, and it's gone. I'm indicating to you we have one face here and another face behind the scenes.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. I think I don't know if comrades want to talk to the SAPS IPED issue, because I thought the way Comrade Boy approached it, we wanted to tie it, but I just want to check so that I'm not smaller than. All right, okay, that's fine.
No, mine is on the time frames, because the National Commissioner apparently made a commitment to this meeting that there will be a meeting with IPED. I think what we need to do, we need to agree on the time frames as to when will that meeting sit and when will they finalize that is this issue and close it.
Then what, you wanted to talk on the IPED SAPS? If not, no, I'll still come to you. I just want to ask to tie this one. And then I come to you and then go to Comrade Chilwa.
No, Chair, my issues were twofold. The first part was on this IPED matter, and then the second part was
follow-ups
on...
No, it's okay. I'll still come back to you. But you still want to talk on the IPED issue?
No, Chair, yeah. Here's the thing. We've been told about 2017. When IPED was here last week, they've been making requests from 2012. So that's why I am not buying anything that has been said here. Zero. The general comes and she's reading from 2017 and gives us a summary of a summary to say stuff and stuff. We don't deal with stuff here. We deal with facts. So, Chair, what I'm requesting is that can IPED make a submission of a chronological list of the requests that they have made, and then for that summary to be juxtaposed against that list so that you can get a response to each one. Because the fundamental issue here is that we are hiding behind technicalities. I am yet to hear the general dispute, the National Commissioner dispute now, what Mr. McBride has said in terms of a concerted effort to stifle that investigation. I would like him to speak to the record so that we can actually know who's who in the zoo. That's the first part, Chairperson. Secondly, why I want to vouch, and I'm subject to question, but I doubt I'm wrong. I'm hardly ever wrong. You can even ask Sasa. I said CPS will come in through the window, and it has. Mm. So in this instance, I doubt I'm wrong. Last time, I asked the CFO, how did the payment go through on the last day of the financial year? In part of the responses, the National Commissioner gave a warning, which don't venture into that territory like that. So I'm saying, Chair, we are dealing here with an organized syndicate within the SAP.
All right. I want us to tie it down. Comrade Vincent and Ross, just briefly pointed. We just want to tie it down and move forward. Yes, Comrade.
I'm not sure what you're wanting us to do, Chair, but if I'm out of order...
On IPED and the SAP?
Yeah, no.
All right.
It's fine.
Okay.
Sure. All right. Maybe, Chair, we should start by asking General Skitter. You're the CFO, aren't you, General Skitter? CFO. Now, who was the CFO in 2012?
It was me at the time.
Yeah. Right. I just wanted to check that, Chair. Related to the IPED matter, do you accept that Captain Shabalala was appointed illegally? Appointed illegally.
Well, sir, I think you should ask the HR in.
No, I'm asking you. Do you? What is your view?
It. I don't have the facts as. The other environments, it appears to be the case. Yes, sir.
What is your view, Chief, around this matter? I'm not asking about HR. You've got all the facts. Captain Shabalala, what is your view on how he got into SAPS? I know you were not there at the time, but I'm just asking you now as the current head.
When I looked at it, there were questions that couldn't be answered fully. Then I asked IT to investigate it.
General Skitter, and as the CFO, and maybe crime intelligence, whoever it is, but you the CFO, your view is that somebody is in the system illegally. We give that individual 50 million rand. I don't even talk about what that money was used for, because that's another fight for another day. What that money was used for is a fight for another day. That makes many of us very bitter. I'm asking you just on the rands and cents. 50 million rand of taxpayers' money gets given to somebody who today you stand in front of Parliament and say, you know what, that person was illegal. It's like me coming to SAPS. Me coming to SAPS tomorrow into the building, and you as the CFO, because I would assume you signed the check. Did you sign the check?
No, sir. I think I should qualify. I was the CFO for the Open Vote Police. You're talking about the Secret Service account, which is not part of the Open Vote and had an other own CFO. So it's not part of my responsibilities. It was outside the vote. It's being appropriated on the vote of Treasury and then being donated there. It was not part of... So I cannot answer you because it was not within the voted funds you gave us.
No, that's the question that we need to get to. That's why I'm asking you here. Somebody here must come and say to us, it's somebody that's on our payroll, but we have no control about it. Because it can't be that 50 million rand of taxpayers' money gets given to a rogue. And all of us as Parliament sit down and say, well, it's fine. But I'm glad you've clarified it. I mean, that was the first question, Chair, that I wanted to ask on that one. Just the last one on Ms. Khan. I think it's General. You know, Ms. Khan, when you were taking us through that list of yours about what has and has not been done, you made a statement on a request made by IPED on documents or declassification. And you made a flippant statement by saying somebody, Matlakata, I think, you will ask or you have asked Matlakata to assist in this regard. They've asked for a document. What do you mean when you say to assist in this regard? You can't come to Parliament and say we've asked. Are you saying to me that you said to Matlakata, and if he's here or she's here, we want to know. When did you ask Matlakata? And what do you mean when you say you've asked to assist in this regard? Juxtapose that to you, Chief. You said a few minutes ago when my colleague, Comrade Boy, was asking you, you said you're going to meet with IPED and you're going to give them all the information. Now, here's your subordinate saying she said to somebody, deal with this matter, whatever that means, deal with this matter. And she must never come back to Scopa and say, I said deal with this matter. For the record, ma'am, don't ever come back to Scopa and say, I said to somebody, deal with this matter, because Tim and all of us have consistently said, give us the facts because we want to evaluate and monitor you. Deal with this matter, you must explain. But how do we now juxtapose, Chair, because Commissioner is saying he's going to talk to the young men at the back to give them whatever they want. General Khan says, I've spoken to, I think it's Matlakata, to deal with this matter. Where do we sit here? Are you overruling her? Are you going to deal with it? Or is she still going to deal with it? So that we can come back tomorrow and say, why has Matlakata not given IFED what they want? And who do we hold responsible for that? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. I think, firstly, I acknowledge what the Honorable Member says. We will not come to the committee to explain what processes we followed because the committee wants the results. What General Khan is referring to is the information pertaining to General Mduli that IPED is looking for. When the matter was brought to my attention, and then I said, where's the information we can declassify? That's when they discovered the information is not in the file. And they started tracing it. They traced it with DPCI. So when she says General Matlakata should assist, it's because General Matlakata is the head of DPCI, and the information is in possession of the members who are within DPCI. And at the point when she brought that to General Matlakata's information, General Matlakata had to first peruse the dockets, call those particular members. That's where the matter need to. But we will not bring that to the committee. In my engagement with IPED, what I'm just going to do, I'm going to get General Matlakata from here. We meet and we call those members. They clarify the information as it has been explained here. Once the information is clarified, then I'll just declassify the information. But those processes are not for the committee. They are just for us. And we will deal with them and then provide the information.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm happy with that. And I think one of my colleagues mentioned it. Now that we've got this commitment, because we're going to get to commitments later on, General, and if he's done it, I apologize, must give us the time frames. You're going to talk to Matlakata, you're going to talk to IPED, we're going to have this matter resolved. I'm not sure if he's given it to us, Chair, but I think somebody must give us that says, look, this thing can be done by the end of the week or by the end of the month or within 14 days, so that IPED can come back and say they have not done it. Matlakata can come back to us and say, you've not come to visit us. You can come back to us and say, these people have not made themselves available to meet with you. So I don't know if you want to tie down or if we should ask them to say, what is the time frame? My own view is that this thing must be done within the next 14 days. That's my own view. Within the next 14 days, we should have this meeting and this thing finalized in terms of how do we move forward. But I leave that up to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd just like to support the proposal that we have a comprehensive list in terms of the questions and the responses from SAPS to IPED in this regard. But I must say, Chairperson, I haven't seen the document that IPED indicated, that South African Police Services indicated what is in the public interest and what is not in the public interest. I think South Africans will be shocked to see that one department can decide what is in the public interest. And if it is about classification and declassification of documents, I think just to bear in mind, Chairperson, that we have the authority as COPAT also to rope in the state security in this regard to see what is classified and what is not classified. And I think it's about time that we get to the bottom of it. And that what is particularly concerning to the South African public is what is in the press and the domain with regards to a convict that had 50 million rand and the ANC Congress is implicated, perhaps of that person getting votes for specific persons. I think we need to get to the bottom of that, because there's also political implication, as I last said, and certainly when there's 50 million rand around, who were the politicians that was involved in this? Because this goes straight to the heart of our democracy when you start buying votes. And in general, I think it's very important that we get perhaps beyond the point of classified information and see what really happened, and we would like some straightforward answers to you, just to support my colleague, Honorable Bui. The second point that I think South Africans will be very concerned about is to hear today that somebody has the authority perhaps to switch off the systems of SARS, and I think my colleague... But that is another point. Should I hold that for later?
Hold on that one.
Thank you, sir.
I just want to tie this, this aspect. No, I think... let's leave it at that point. One, which is that...